Okay, well, thanks everybody for tuning in. This is going to be an overview of the CARES Act. I'm Josh Bowman. I'm the chair of the hospitality practice group at Sharon and Lodgen. And together with me today for the presentation are Jay Pike from Citron Cooperman, Joseph Schulman from Citron Cooperman, and Michael Kuhn from Cambridge Savings Bank. Jay, do you want to go ahead and just tell us a little bit about yourself and your practice at Citron? We have Jay. Joe, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about your practice at Citron Cooperman?
So we're a firm of about 1,200 people, based in New York, headquartered in New York, where we have offices up here in Braintree and Providence. And Woburn, we have a large hospitality group, very, very robust hospitality group. And I have many restaurant and hospitality clients. And obviously, you know, phones have been ringing off the hook for the last couple of weeks. So this is a good opportunity to spread this information out.
Okay. And Michael Kuhn, do you want to introduce yourself? And I'm going to try to get Jay Pike to be able to be heard here.
Sure, I'm Mike Kuhn. I am a team leader and a commercial lender in the C&I group over at Cambridge Savings Bank. We're a $4 billion mutual savings bank. We have a large commercial real estate practice that has a lot of local hoteliers, as well as in our C&I group where I sit, we do a fair number of restaurant loans, both to individual operators as well as restaurant groups. As you may imagine, being a bit of a generalist, we are getting calls from all kinds of industries, businesses, and the phones just keep continue to ring off the hook with for details about this and just talking about what the bank can do to help things out now that everything is kind of just slowing to a halt. And I will just preface everything I'm saying is a lot of the stuff we'll talk about today is more opinion than from reading the laws, from reading what has been out there. The SBA has not formally issued guidance. They have 15 days from the signing of the bill to do so. So some of this is just interpretation and opinion, and it's subject to final rules by the SBA.
Okay, thanks, Michael. You know, I apologize to Jay, but I can't seem to figure out how to get him to be unmuted. So, Jay, if you could work on it from your end, you know, if you can get yourself into the Zoom call and unmute yourself, we'd love to have your input. But I'm gonna, in the interest of time, I'm gonna start here. So, here are the topics that we're gonna cover today. The first is what's called PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program. In addition to that, we're gonna talk about other financing programs, including EIDL loans. Then we're gonna move to the expansion of unemployment insurance benefits. And finally, last but not least, Joe Schulman will talk about tax relief. So PPP is payroll protection. And the way it works is that it's part of the existing SBA loan program. The 6A program already exists. I'm sorry, 7A program already exists. And this is just an addition to that program. It works through local banks where a restaurant owner or hotel owner can go to their existing bank or credit union and they can make essentially an application to get one of these PPP loans. There's approximately $350 billion that's been guaranteed by the SBA as of now. That probably is not gonna be enough. So we'll have to wait and see if the SBA reauthorizes additional funds. And this program is for small businesses. So small businesses is a term that's already defined in the SBA regs. It's at the most basic level, it's a business with 500 employees or fewer, but there are very specific industry regulations already in place to define what is a small business. And then there are some categories specific for the PPP. The first, as it relates to hotels and restaurants, is it's 500 employees or fewer per location. So normally under the SBA regs, and I'm sure Michael can speak to this better than I can, there is something called common control, where they look to see how many employees the entire organization or enterprise has in multiple locations. Here, they are not doing that for the hotel and the restaurant business. It is only 500 employees per location. In addition to that, they will look at revenue numbers. And if you have too much revenue, you may not qualify as a small business. Michael, do you want to add some details?
Sure. Since most people today are in the hospitality industry, big numbers would be hotels are limited to $35 million of revenue. A full service restaurant is limited to $8 million of revenue. And a limited service restaurant is limited to $12 million of revenue. On the SBA website, it's www.sba.gov/size standards. There's actually a tool on there that you'll be able to put in your restaurant or business's NAICS code, which you can just Google a NAICS code search, and you'll be able to put in your revenue size to see if you qualify for that. I really foresee this being a little bit of an issue for some larger restaurants, some higher volume or higher dollar amount fine dining establishments because of that $8 million threshold. So more to come on that, but basically the SBA has said that we must use the size requirements specified in their guidance, and those are the high-level numbers.
Great. Thanks, Michael. So who's eligible? In addition to the size requirements, the PPP allows sole proprietors and independent contractors to participate in this program. So that's your gig economy workers, your Lyft drivers, those kinds of self-employed people. Those types of sole proprietorships or independent contractors would qualify for the program. As I mentioned earlier, there are existing SBA affiliation rules. They're waived for hotels and restaurants, and they're also waived for franchises. So when you're looking at a hotel, the SBA is not going to look at a franchisee's employee numbers across multiple franchises or amongst different franchisees. It's 500 per location for a hotel or a restaurant. Underwriting. So how do you get the money? So the standards to get the PPP, what's initially a loan and then converts to a grant, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But in order to get the money, the SBA standards are lower than a typical 7A SBA loan. There are no personal guarantees required. There's no collateral required. The SBA is not supposed to do an underwriting analysis to see if the borrower can pay the money back. They're really only supposed to look at a limited number of concerns, one of which is to make sure that the business was operational as of February 15th of 2020. Michael, do you want to comment a little bit about what the local lender might be looking for versus what the SBA might be looking for?
Sure. I guess at a high level, the SBA has put together, or the bill rather, the CARE Act, and put together a broad framework of this, where they said the SBA will not require these personal guarantees, will not require collateral, not determine repayment ability. One thing to note, because you are going to your local institutions to get this, and all of the, which we will get to, and the second part is we'll get to later here, is that all of the loan may not be forgiven. The bank may want to look to make sure the loan can be repaid if there's a portion of the loan that may be expected will not be forgiven under the way the guidelines are written. So while the SBA is not requiring guarantees or collateral, the bank may request guarantees or collateral, because these loans will live on their books if a portion is not forgiven.
Okay, that's a great point. And again, let's hit that point again once we get to the forgiveness of the debt. So part of the underwriting is that the borrower is supposed to certify, make certain certifications to the SBA that the loan is necessary due to the uncertainty of the current economic conditions caused by COVID-19. They're supposed to acknowledge that the funds will be used for certain eligible purposes, which include payroll costs, mortgage interest, lease payments, which I'm sure is of great interest to all the restaurant owners, and utility payments. And then the borrower is not supposed to have another application pending under another loan under the SBA program for the same use. So we'll go into that in greater detail in a few minutes as well. So what's the maximum amount of the loan? Michael, do you want to kind of walk us through the sizing of the loan here?
Sure. So at a very basic level, the loan cap is $10 million. The way it is determined is 250% of the employer's average monthly payroll costs over a one-year period of loan. Now, or 1 year period of time. Now, if the loan is seasonal, if the business is seasonal, it's a seaside resort down the Cape or something like that, where there's kind of some seasonality to the business, the SBA is allowing certain time frames to be taken to get to that average number. However, the loan would be limited to kind of that size of the 8 week period that this will be covering. One thing I will say is the SBA has told us they are going to put a calculator right on their website. So being able to calculate what that number is available to you will be easily calculatable. There are plenty of some banks, some finance companies, some accounting firms have started to put together their own kind of spreadsheets. And I would just put a little bit of caution on that, saying that the SBA hasn't finalized everything, and their calculations or how they do it may change a little bit from what has been already out there in the world. So I would look back at that. When looking at employer and employees in that calculation, you will see that it's limited to, you're gonna have general managers of hotels that are making well in excess of $100,000. As part of this calculation, it is limited to 100. So if they were making $150,000 a year, when doing your calculation, you can only put that in as 100,000. And we can get to some other ways to be able to find a way to make the difference. But as far as calculating this part, it is salaries up to $100,000, and everything above that just gets knocked off.
And I think we may have some brokers who have joined the call as well. I'm not sure, but just to point this out, you know, the payroll costs that you can use for this 250% calculation include commissions and tips. So even if you're not on regular payroll, and again, we don't have all the details of how this is going to be calculated by the SBA. I'm not sure too many people do, but I do know that commissions are included in what can be counted for the sizing of the loan.
And that is my understanding as well.
Yeah. So then we get to the allowed uses of the PPP loan. So, and again, just to let everybody know, I mean, the idea of these loans is that they will be forgiven and it will turn into a grant. But before we get to debt forgiveness, we just want to make sure everyone understands how much money you can get and what you can use the money for, separate and apart from the issue of when and how it gets forgiven. So the allowed uses here are, payroll costs, which is defined very broadly, just as we just went through, that includes tips, commissions, benefits. So it's a very broad definition of payroll costs, healthcare benefits, insurance premiums, commissions. And then it can be used for interest on mortgage obligations, but not principal, rent, utilities, and interest on other debt obligations, meaning debt obligations not, you know, out in addition to mortgage obligations. The trick here is that all these obligations must have been effective as of February 15th. So for utilities, the service must have been in effect as of February 15th. Joe or Michael, do you have anything you want to add to the allowed uses?
I think that covers it.
Great. Okay, so this is really where we're getting most of the questions. The intent of this program is for these loans, if they're used properly, to never be paid back, to be converted into a grant. But there are a number of strings that are attached to make that kind of thing happen. Michael, do you want to walk through the debt forgiveness piece?
Sure. So the debt forgiveness piece really comes down to uses. So potentially, the loan could be forgiven in an amount equal to those eligible expenses that you put in your loan application that were incurred during the 8-week period following the loan disbursement. You know, as I said, the payroll excluding compensation above $100,000 to an employee, interest on the mortgage, rent, and utility payments. However, that amount can be reduced over time. And those reductions come through, you weren't able to keep the headcount where it was when you, for that comparable period, or the wages for those people declined 25%. Now, one thing that they have kind of thrown in there, which I don't fully understand, was a period, they give you this other grace period for June 30th to cure it. I don't know how that is going to work. Obviously, with the CARE Act, with unemployment being extended, as well as the extra, I believe it's $600 to folks, getting some people to go back to work at the hotel, even if it were open, for example, may be difficult. They may want to wait until the end of the expiration of period before they take their job back because they're at home, they're taking care of loved ones, schools are closed, and basically they're making about the same money. So there could be a risk there, and that I think that June 30th date is supposed to help alleviate some of that. Except I don't know exactly how it's going to be implemented at this time.
Yeah, I mean, let me just kind of back up and take it a little bit slowly. So there are multiple ways where the debt forgiveness can be negatively impacted. So you want to get the entire loan to be forgiven if possible. But in order to have debt forgiveness, you really have to maintain your employee headcounts. And the way that works is that there's a baseline that's established, and the baseline is the borrower can choose to have the SBA look at either the period beginning February 15th of 19 and ending on June 30th of 19, or the period beginning on January 1st of 20 and ending on 2/29/20. So you can pick which period that the SBA should look at, but during that period, the SBA is basically told how many full-time equivalent employees the borrower has on its payroll. And then what's supposed to happen is that because of the PPP loan, the borrower is supposed to maintain that same level of workforce, whether it's the period from February to June of 19 or the period from January 20 to February 29th of 20. The idea is that's your baseline. And if you have less full-time equivalent employees than you had during that baseline, then your debt forgiveness ability is negatively impacted. The other, one of the other ways that your debt forgiveness can be negatively impacted, as Michael just said, is that if you reduce the pay of your employees that you hire back by more than 25%, then your debt forgiveness will be negatively impacted on a dollar for dollar basis. So just getting back to this slide, these are the two ways that your debt forgiveness can be negatively impacted. And then, as Michael just said, there is this idea in the CARES Act that if you are able to cure your FTE reduction, your full-time equivalent employee reduction, by June 30th, somehow you can still get the maximum amount of debt forgiveness that's possible in your circumstances. And we don't really understand how this June 30th cure date is supposed to work. I think we're all waiting for the SBA to issue some guidelines on it. But we just wanted everyone to know that there is this ability to cure if your full-time equivalent numbers are have not they're not 100% of your baseline. So just I put up a little example. I know it's very, very confusing, but here in this example, if the PPP loan is $1 million and the borrower's qualifying expenses, that means payroll, debt service, utilities, rent payments are 800,000. So right off the bat, this borrower in this example is not going to use 100% of the $1 million for qualified expenses. Then the only $800,000 is going to be subject to forgiveness. And then if we assume that during the 8-week period, only 75% of the baseline is achieved, meaning that the borrower is really only able to hire back 75% of his full-time equivalent employees as compared to the baseline, then only $600,000 of the million will be forgiven. Because right off the bat, only $800,000 is being used for eligible expenses. And then of that $800,000, only 75% is going to be forgivable because of the fact that not all of the full-time equivalent employees came back to work. This assumes that there's no cure of the workforce reduction. We don't really understand exactly how that cure process works, and I don't think it's clear in the bill. And this assumes there's no 25% comp reduction. If people's salaries are reduced by more than 25%, that will also be a negative adjustment on the debt forgiveness. And at the end of this, we'll go over questions and try to have our experts here answer the questions. I know it's confusing. We're going to make these slides available to as many people as we can who have called in. The key to that is really send me an email to let me know that you're on the call so I can be sure to get you the deck. We're also going to be doing a client alert at Sharon and Lodgen later today, which we can also send out, which will help to clarify some of this. So getting to the loan application process, we know that within 15 days of when the CARES Act was enacted, which was on March 27th, the SBA was required to promulgate regulations telling people how to apply for these loans. Secretary Mnuchin said that those regulations would be ready on April 3rd, which I believe is Friday. I think all of the banks are very busy trying to get themselves as ready as possible to start taking applications as soon as these regulations come out. I think we expect the applications to look a lot like the SBA Form 1919. And I'm going to turn it over to Michael to talk about, the lender's perspective on these applications.
Sure, thank you. So, as Josh said, the banks are still in very much a waiting game because the SBA has that 15 days to put this together. They are going to not so much take their time, but they need that time to be able to get the information to the banks. And to be perfectly honest, we will probably know the information at the same time those applications are released, because that's typically how the SBA works. Banks like mine and other people that I've talked to are really gearing up for this because of the scope of the clients that are impacted by this. The application level is going to be very high. So because you're going directly to the bank and not the SBA, it's really going to depend on your bank's ability to quickly and efficiently process the application and get it to a closing and get you funded. So I know one question is going to be how quickly, can I go from having this full application to having a deposit in my account? The answer is, I don't know. I'm going to say up front, it's probably going to be closer to, 2 weeks, just given the number of volume. And that could be shorter, it could be less, but I would set expectations on a longer lead time that will eventually start to shorten as banks get better at it, as the SBA guidance becomes a little more second nature. But initially, I think it's going to be take a little bit of time, which also is going to put pressure on getting the application done earlier, for fear that, you know, the initial $350 billion is going to run out. Now, I think when you start rolling back the math on these, that $350 billion may be enough. However, we don't know. So while there are other loan programs out there, including the economic disaster loan, my energy, and I've told my customers and clients, this is my energy would be looking at this first, put my energy in there, and then you know, put your efforts out at the other programs out there to fill in the gaps, because you know, this is, lack of a better term, free money that doesn't have to be repaid in all likelihood, as long as it's used for eligible purposes. So it's going to be an interesting time, so have a little bit of patience, but you know, your existing lender should be able to help you through the process.
And thank you, Michael. And so I know, you know, the $24,000 question here, which I'm sure you can't give a solid answer on, is in terms of the time frame. I mean, what should people expect? What's reasonable to expect in terms of approval?
As I said, I think 2 weeks would probably be the number.
Okay.
At least initially, I think as these things go through, I think you're going to be able to get that down significantly. I just don't. I would go in with a little bit of patience, knowing it's new to everybody, and just the volume there. I mean, it's like getting into the stadium before, you know, 10 minutes before game time, you're going to get stuck in line.
Great. And so I think we may have Jay Pike. Jay, are you available? Do you have your audio?
I do.
Great. Jay,
do you hear me?
I know you have an expertise in SBA issues. Is there anything you want to add here?
Yeah, sure. So I know Joe's going to talk about the tax relief and some of the tax provisions, but there's sort of three ways I see businesses can put all these programs to use. And one, I think, is the option of the payroll tax credit to the extent people are under quarantine time. You know, I'm having conversations with my clients about how do I keep my workforce intact. I don't think I'm getting back into business until late April. They've got some folks under quarantine time, so they can use that payroll tax provision in the Families First Act, and then immediately, now, if not already, they should be applying for these two loans. One is the EIDL loan, which is directly through the SBA website, and the other one is the PPP, which is through a bank like and a banker like Michael. And I think that as long as you don't use those sources for the same costs, or you know, you don't try to get reimbursed twice, you can certainly take advantage of all three of those options, including those two loans.
Oh, that's awesome, Jay. Thanks. Why don't we do this? That segues perfectly into the EIDL program, which I'm already having people sort of message me about. And the question of the day is, can you apply for both? And I think, Jay, you just hit the nail on the head that you can. So either Jay or Michael, do you want to kind of explain the EIDL loans and how you can potentially apply for both? Jay, do you want to take it?
Sure.
Since, you've had not as much speaking time as everyone else.
Sure. So the EIDL loan is available for small businesses up to $2 million. It's as you can see on the slide, it's 3.75% is the interest rate, 30-year term, and you can get an emergency advance of $10,000, but that actually, I believe, reduces your PPP loan eligibility or maximum, if I'm not mistaken. That's correct, Michael?
That's correct. And that $10,000 would reduce your PPP loan. So because you received that upfront, that would reduce the PPP loan. So if you got a $1 million PPP loan, it would now be $990,000 in available funds.
Right. So you can apply for that EIDL loan or EIDL loan through the SBA. It's basically SBA.gov, and there's a disaster page. I think it's actually, they changed it to now COVID-19 something. But it's very easy to find. The application doesn't take more than an hour or two. You just need recent tax returns, number of employees, and information on the business owners to complete that. And it's fairly simple. I would get that in as soon as possible, as well as working with Michael's group on applying for loans through the PPP program.
And just so everybody knows,
if you looked at the,
I was just going to say, Michael, that, you know, everybody's contact information is on the first slide, which we'll send out. So you can call a Jay or Joe or Michael, you know, email them. You can work with them directly. But Michael, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
What I was going to say is if a lot of people had tried to apply for the EIDL loan in the early days of it and found that the application was pretty hard and difficult to figure out. In the last few days, maybe the last day or two, they did update their website to have like a wizard on there to actually walk you through. So the process of applying for the EIDL loan isn't as daunting as it was last week.
And so what I was going to add was that, you know, you can't apply for the EIDL and the PPP loans for the same purpose. So, for example, payroll. If you want to get money for payroll, you should go through PPP. But what you can do is apply for both loans for different purposes. So one example would be one could apply for the PPP loan for payroll. And again, that loan gets forgiven, hopefully. It gets completely turned into a grant. It's quote unquote free money from the government. The EIDL loan continues to be a loan, but it's on very good terms. It's for 30 years at 3.75%. And you could use the EIDL loan for inventory. If you needed FF&E for your hotel or your restaurant, or you needed food costs, or any number of other issues. If you have a construction issue and you need to, you know, all of a sudden you have a big cost overrun as a result of a construction project because the construction got shut down, you probably couldn't use PPP for something like that, but you could use EIDL. And again, you can get $10,000 within 3 days as an emergency advance, and that money does not have to be refunded if your EIDL loan is denied. I guess the one other thing that we skipped over with EIDL loans is that I'm expecting, from what I've heard, that the timing will be much longer than a PPP loan. The PPP loans, you know, everyone is hoping, fingers crossed, will be a couple weeks. The EIDL loans could be quite a bit longer. I don't know. I don't want to say how long it could take to process, but it could take over 30 days to process an EIDL loan. Michael, do you have anything you want to add on that?
I have been told people will get the approvals in a reasonable amount of time. However, funding won't happen until 4 to 6 weeks for the full amount. That's why they're offering that emergency $10,000 and preferred SBA lenders were allowed to give up to a $25,000 bridge loan to support that approved EIDL loan application. So I believe that will get you up to $35,000 for that approved EIDL loan application pretty quickly.
That's great. Thank you. I'm going to spend about 5 seconds talking about there are other loans, other financing available in the CARES Act. This was passed on Friday. No one on this call really has a terrifically clear handle on these other loan programs. Some of them are for larger employers having 500 to 10,000 employees. These are not forgivable loans like the PPP. In my firm, most clients are asking about PPP and EIDL. So we're not going to spend any time on these other programs. But if you think that you might be interested in these other programs, you can certainly let any of us know after the call. And when we have information about them, we're happy to share. So unemployment benefits, as I think it was Jay mentioned earlier, or possibly Michael, There have been some expansion in the unemployment benefits programs. I'm going to run through them extremely quickly, so we're running short on time. So the CARES Act substantially increases the amount of unemployment benefits that are available. These benefits go through December 31st of 2020, which means that all eligible workers will have the ability to get unemployment insurance through December 31st, 2020. The unemployment benefits are now available for workers who are not traditionally eligible. I mean, self-employed people, independent contractors, some small business owners. I don't know if anybody on the call has more information about who is available for unemployment that wouldn't typically be eligible for unemployment. Joe or Jay or Michael, do you guys know?
No.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming this is for Uber drivers and Lyft drivers, but I'm not sure. It may also apply to a restaurant that's owned by one or two people in an LLC that wouldn't normally be eligible for unemployment. We're still trying to get to the bottom of that. I don't want to give anybody false hope, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's any resident of the state at this point. Any resident or citizen that, you know, has verifiable income in the past. We're still looking for that person that's not eligible.
Great. Well, I guess, for the greater good, that's a good thing that everybody can get this if they're unemployed. As Michael said earlier, there is an additional $600 per week paid by the federal government. This is an issue for hotels and restaurants, as Michael alluded to earlier, that if a low-paid worker is unemployed and they're getting 60% or so of their income through unemployment benefits, and then they're getting an additional $600 per week, getting them to rejoin the workforce if they've been laid off will probably be difficult. We are looking into that whole issue and trying to come up with some clear guidance on it. But there's no question that that's going to be a difficult thing with the PPP and the debt forgiveness being tied to your full-time equivalent employees coming back to work. This $600 per week might actually make that difficult. That runs out on July 31st, 2020. And I note that strange cure period date of June 30th, which we don't fully understand, is that's before this $600 runs out. So if the goal is to get people back to work by June 30th, the fact that the $600 per week continues until July 31st may make that even more difficult. The last thing on unemployment is that there is this new program. It may not be a new program. I'm not really sure. I'm not an employment lawyer by trade, but there is a program where you can have workers work part-time and then they get unemployment benefits based on the amount of their reduction in hours. And the unemployment benefits are prorated based on the amount of their reduction in hours. So this is a short-time compensation program. It's designed to help employers help them not lay off their valued employees, but just have them be on a reduced time basis, but still have those workers be paid unemployment benefits. And this is 50% guaranteed to the states. It's a state program. It's guaranteed 50% by the CARES Act, meaning the federal government. All right, with that, I'm gonna turn it over to Joe Shulman and of Citrin Cooperman and let Joe walk us through the tax provisions. Joe, I'll just drive the slides and you can take it away.
So let me ask you, Josh, how much time do you want me to, how much time should I figure I have on to do this?
I think that, why don't we go until, maybe 10 minutes. Okay. And I think people will want to hear, and then people who want to stick around for questions, I know I can stick around for a bit, and people need to drop off can drop off.
So what I'd like to do then, I was going to try to be funny and set this up as a top 10 list, like David Letterman, but I couldn't, there were too many items, and so I couldn't get the numbering right. But the most important items are at the bottom. So I think you know.
You want me to skip ahead here?
Yeah, why don't you go down to the bottom, and I'd like to go over the really important stuff. And
this is the last one, tax planning.
Go up one slide. Okay, so these are the three most important, you know, this is where there's big money involved, potentially. I mean, the 6.2% Social Security tax, so all employers can defer the Social Security tax for the rest of the year unless they get a PPP loan. If they do defer, then they basically get an interest-free loan in the government, 50% of which, so the taxes have to be repaid 50% of by December 31st, 2021, and the other 50% by December 31st, 2022. The next one is a really big one, which is when the Trump legislation passed, when the 2017 tax law that took effect in 2018, when that law went into effect, they repealed the carryback of net operating losses. So businesses that lost money could no longer immediately file for a refund claim to carry back that income to prior years when they paid taxes. That law, which was passed in 17, has now been repealed. And the new law is much more generous than the old law was, which you could only go back 2 years, go back 5 years. So any losses that you have in 18, 19, and 20 can now be carried back 5 years. So that's an opportunity to get, you know, potentially a lot of money, and it's tax-free money because it's a refund of federal income tax. And then another big change is that you're probably all aware of the fact that the 17 tax legislation was supposed to provide for leasehold improvements, certain, you know, qualifying leasehold improvements, which is basically all leasehold improvements, to be eligible for bonus depreciation. And due to a mistake in the drafting of the law, it technically didn't qualify. And for some reason, Congress chose not to correct that in the whatever legislation they've passed since 2017 until now. And they've now allowed businesses to go back and correct 18 and 19, but to claim bonus depreciation on leasehold improvements that they didn't claim. And, you know, since leasehold improvements otherwise depreciated over 39 years, it's a huge difference. And it's also an opportunity to maybe go back and amend prior year returns, creating losses, which can then be carried back to, you know, 5 years. Only thing I want to say is very technical is that there's certain partnerships that either elected out of what's called centralized audit procedures, BBA. It's actually a law that was passed in 2015. It came into effect in 18, coincidentally. And you cannot amend partnerships that did not elect out of centralized audit. And certain partnerships couldn't elect out. If they had a partnership for a partner or a trust as a partner, they couldn't elect out. But if you did elect out, you can still go back and amend. If you didn't elect out, you're probably going to, you know, maybe they'll pass some type of relief, or you can make a change on your 2020 return and basically get the benefit of that bonus depreciation on your 2020 return and then potentially carry that back. Josh, if you want to skip down to the last one, the last slide.
Yep.
So the two changes, the tax planning opportunities are to amend 18 and 19, or if you haven't filed 19, to do 19, take bonus depreciation, generate losses, which can then be carried back. And the other consideration is it doesn't really apply to hotels and restaurants, but if there are anybody, other businesses on this call, there's an opportunity to switch to cash basis if you have sales under 25 million. This is something that came in with the 17 law. Sometimes that didn't look attractive because it was going to create a loss, and it just didn't, for various reasons, didn't look attractive. But with this net operating loss carryback and the fact that we're in such a terrible economy, it might become more attractive, and it might be worth it to switch to cash basis. One of the things I forgot to mention, probably maybe the number one benefit of this on my top 10 list, is that the forgiveness of the PPP loan is itself not taxable, which is unbelievable because you're borrowing that money to pay business expenses, You're getting the deduction for the business expenses. And if they forgive the loan, you end up with the tax deduction without having to report the income. So that's like, I can't believe, that's an unbelievable benefit. Okay, so now if you want to go to the top.
Sure. No, you're doing great, Joe. This is one of the first tax presentations I've seen where I've been amused and excited. So keep it going.
I hope you. I hope there's no is there sarcasm in that? Okay, so this top one is relatively unimportant, but there's Section 139, which was passed after 9/11, that basically allows employers to make payments to employees for reimbursing them for a wide range of things that you do not have to put on their W-2. And I won't go beyond that. You can buy equipment, you can help them modify their home to be working from home. There's all kinds of stuff. This is a disaster related thing. Under this new law, the CARES package, you can make, the employer can make student loan, can actually pay student loan, make student loan payments on behalf of employees or reimburse them for student loan payments, which is similar to what they could do for paying for their education, but it didn't cover loans. Can you go up one? Okay,
this
I'm
is
sorry.
The top. Yep.
Go down one. Yeah. Okay, so now obviously everybody knows about the fact that you can delay filing tax returns and paying tax returns in Massachusetts from any payments due April 15th or first quarter estimates due June 15th of delayed until July 15th. But there is a loophole which you have to be aware of. And that is that the I'm sorry, Jay just sent me a question and I lost my train of thought.
You're supposed to read that after.
Oh yeah, I know what it was. You cannot extend C-Corp tax returns, and you cannot extend the payments due on C-Corp tax returns or trust tax returns beyond April 15th in Massachusetts. So you have to be careful that you don't get, you know, caught up in that. That doesn't apply, that extension does not apply to corporations and trusts, even though it does apply at the federal level. Okay, IRA qualified plan relief. This is some miscellaneous stuff that may or may not apply. Withdraw $100,000. If you're under 59 and a half, you do not pay the 10% penalty. If you're over, whether you're over 59 and a half or under 59 and a half, you do not have to pay the tax on this, because you have a 3-year period with which to repay this back into the plan or to the IRA. And if you don't pay it back within 3 years, then I believe you pick up the income one-third in years 4, 5, and 6. I think I've got this right. If I don't, I apologize, but it's close. The interesting one is that age 70 and a half, people who are required to take out minimum distributions in 2020, who are people who are 70 and a half and older, or potentially people who turned 70 and a half in 2019 but delayed the minimum contribution, they don't have to take a minimum distribution at all in 2020. So that's, for very wealthy people, that's attractive. And then the basic rules on borrowing, like from a 401k plan, now you can borrow 50% of your balance up to $50,000. That $50,000 has been increased to $100,000 for loans that are made between March 27th and 6 months after March 27th. Okay. Next, Josh.
Yep.
So these tax credits, COVID, I think it was the CARES legislation, one of the legislations mandated that you pay sick pay and Family Leave Act pay for people who are out either because they themselves have become ill or because they're caring for a family member who's either sick or maybe children who are home from school because the schools are closed. And there's a mandated 10-day period of coverage that employers have to make. And those payments, which you can see, is a 100% tax credit for that against your payroll taxes. So you can either stop paying payroll taxes, those 941 payments that you make, and reconcile it when you file a quarterly 941, or if you just keep paying your payments, you can then take a credit on the 941 and get a refund. This provision does not apply if you go for a Paycheck Protection Program loan. Next. The employee retention credit is for businesses who have employees that are not working because they've either shut down their business, they've shut down, you know, let's say one location or one type of their business, one division of their business, or they've had a 50% drop in sales, and they do not take a PPP loan. And they're entitled to a credit, which is 50% of each employee's wages up to a maximum of $10,000 wages, or maximum credit of $5,000 per employee. For employers with over 100 employees, the credit only applies to employees not working due to COVID-related circumstances, which it sounds like to me everything is COVID-related, but I don't even know what that means. But if you're under 100 employees, you can have people not working because they don't feel like working, I guess. That's a weird one. Next, please. Okay, so these are more esoteric stuff. The business interest limitation, which could apply if you own the real estate, hotel owners who own the real estate, and they could be affected by this, is increased from 30% of adjusted taxable income to 50% of adjusted taxable income. The excess business loss, which is a real esoteric thing, where you can only take losses up to a certain amount of dollars to offset other income, has been repealed. So that limitation was you could only take a loss of $250,000 or $500,000 if you were single, if you were 250, $500 if you're married, and you could only use that loss. The excess loss became a carry forward, a net operating loss carry forward. That's been repealed through 2020. I'm sure you've all heard about the IRS rebating dollars to people who have income below certain levels, $1,200 if you're single, plus $500 for a child, $2,400 if you're married, plus $500 for a child. Those rebates phase out between 75 and 150 if you're single, and between 99 and 198 if you're married. And this last one is really, I wasn't even going to include this because, you know, most adults used to itemize taxes, but many people now do not itemize. And so this is kind of similar to the $250 educators expense that they get to take in without having to itemize. This is a $300 charitable contribution that everybody's going to take if they don't itemize. Is there anything else?
Yeah, no, that's it. Now we're back to your top five here.
Right.
So that was awesome, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I think what we can do is maybe take some questions. I just want to say thanks to Jay Pike, who's been doing the yeoman's work of answering people's questions on the group chat. Jay, you know, even though, we get as much FaceTime as others, thank you so much for doing that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop the sharing here. And I think that, there should be an option for people to raise their hand. If you want to raise your hand, if you go down to manage participants, I think people can raise their hands. I'll unmute people, if you can unmute yourself, if you want to say something and you don't know how to raise your hand, then just go for it. But we've got Jay Pike, Joe Schulman. I think Michael Kuhn is still on the line. So anybody have any questions? Now's the time.
Hey, Josh, this is Bill Carroll.
Hey, Bill.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
So I've been doing some chatting. You might have seen possibly my most recent question, which tries to clarify, if we're going to forgive under PPP, we're going to forgive 8 weeks, but we can apply for a loan amount of 250% of that. Is that correct?
Yeah, 250%.
That is correct.
The average monthly. You look back at the average monthly and you can get 250% of your average monthly.
What are eligible proceeds that can be listed in the loan app to get to the 250?
Michael, do you
want to
take it?
Sure. I'm just going to start at the beginning, Bill. So it's 250% of the average monthly payroll to get to that number, which was the payroll costs were, all the payroll things, compensation, sales, wage, commissions, tips, allowance for dismissal, separation, healthcare insurance, insurance premiums, retirement benefits, state, local tax assessment on the compensation of employees. and then the period for which it was forgiven was an 8-week period, so basically 2-month period. So there's still that extra 0.5% there that was the extra, which would likely go into which was there to create the other things you could use it for, which were the payroll, all those
mortgage,
things that
mortgage
you
tax,
calculated
lease,
on
lease payments,
mortgage
utilities.
Tax, lease, and utilities.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically you're getting an extra 2 weeks of your payroll and those other OPEX expenses.
Well, you're getting an extra 2 weeks of payroll to calculate how much you're eligible for, and you can use that extra 2 weeks towards paying the interest on your mortgage, interest on other debt, rent, or utility payments.
Okay, and then that becomes...
There are some adjustments you can make. So if you lower the wages of your employees, then you don't start getting a negative adjustment on your debt repayment unless you go below 25% of the wages. So you could free up some extra money to be used for debt service, and it's interest only, Bill, it's not principal, but you can free up some of that PPP money for debt service, for rent, for utilities by, you can pay people a little less. Or, you know, some people might just say, okay, well, it's all free money, so I'd rather have 80% forgiveness, and I know I'm going to use this money. You know, I may not be able to hire everybody back, or I may want to cut wages more than that 75%, but, you know, I'd rather have, even if I end up having 80% of the debt written off, I'm still going to do it because, you know, I'm still getting 80% of that money as free money, and then the rest of it is a low interest SBA loan, which, you know, you can pay back. And then there's also one thing I don't think we mentioned is that you can defer payments on the PPP loan. If you end up with the loan and there's a portion that doesn't get forgiven, and Michael, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you can get between 6 and 12 months of deferred debt service payments on that loan.
I need to look into that. I know we can defer, I believe, 6 months initially. But as further deferral, I would need to look into that because I haven't gotten that far into it.
Yeah, I think it's a minimum of 6 and a maximum of 12. And I don't know how they decide, you know, if you get 6, 7, or 8. But again, you know, for hotels and restaurants that need cash right now, they can get the PPP loan. They can get 100% of it forgiven or maybe less than 100% forgiven. And they can use it for any of those eligible expenses. But it's all the size of the loan is all tied to payroll and only payroll.
So whatever might be left over, it's a non-recourse loan. So in reality, it's non-recourse, right?
Yeah.
May be non-recourse.
Whatever's left over is non-recourse.
There's no guarantee. Go ahead. Sorry, Michael, you're the lender.
Oh, yeah, no. The regulation does not require it to be guaranteed or collateralized, but the lender who is underwriting the loan, because there could be that tail, may request guarantees, may request collateral. So it's at the lender's discretion, but it's not required by the SBA.
Just one last question. The whole delegated authority, preferred lender concept, do you think they will be providing 100%, I guess this ties to also to the level of guarantee. Is the SBA saying they're going to guarantee 100% of the PPL loans, which would obviously then provide you with greater flexibility probably on approvals, right?
So, It's kind of a two-part answer. So the SBA, the way I understand they have set this up is the SBA is providing a 100% guarantee initially for these loans, and they will give you a 100% guarantee on as long as the proceeds are used, 100% of those proceeds are used for eligible costs, and those eligible costs are not reduced by those other factors. For the remaining loan, those ineligible costs that may occur, or the part of the loan that does not get forgiven by the SBA, That SBA guarantee then goes down to a normal 7A where it would be for that size. I think it's 50 or 75% of the loan. So the lender still would have exposure at the end if it was not all forgiven.
Okay, thank you.
And they, and the lender, we believe, needs to be a preferred lender to be able to do this. However, it's not 100, and then it said any lender should be able to do this, but not all banks may choose to participate. So that's still a little bit up in the air, but I'd imagine most banks will participate in the program, at least for their existing customers.
Hey, Michael, there's a question on the chat that I just wanted to bring out for everybody. So the question is, for the calculation of average monthly payroll for PPP, if the property is open for less than 12 months, is it for the number of months open? And I know I read something about a hotel that's been open for less than 12 months, but I don't recall it off the top of my head. Do you know the answer to that?
I believe I need to actually go back and check, but I thought since it has not been open for less than 12 months, you can use a certain period, which was January through February of employee headcount and payroll
right.
numbers, but.
Yeah.
But I'd have to go back and double check, to be perfectly honest.
Tom, if you want to email me or Michael the question just so it's in our inbox, we can get back to you. One of us will get back to you. Any other questions? If anybody needs to be unmuted, you can just message me up. I got one from Jiten Patel. If all employees are hired under a management company, will the eligible costs for each entity offset the PPP loan if it's made to the management company?
I don't know.
If all employees are hired under a management company, will the eligible costs for each entity offset the PPP loan if it's made to the management company? Yeah, I think we're going to need to get back to you on that, Jiten.
SBA is going to need to do some rulemaking that really define that a situation such as that.
I'm seeing another question. So what is considered a business for PPP loan purposes? If we purchased an existing hotel on March 3rd, 2020, will they consider this hotel as a business for providing a loan, or will they look at a new LLC, look at it at this as a new LLC used to purchase, it says the loan, but I think they mean to purchase the hotel. Yeah, purchase the hotel.
I think we'd need to go back to the SBA to ask them that question. However, if I read it literally, they're going by tax ID number, and that tax ID number would not have been an operating entity prior to March 3rd. So it may be disallowed, but again, that will be a question more rulemaking from.
Oops. Okay. I just had a question to share the first slide of the presentation, so everybody's can just see the contact information for everybody again. And I'm going to do that. And then I just want to thank. Let me see. Can everybody see this first slide now? All right. So I will, for the people who, if you've been on the call, please email me and let me know that you were there. Our technology, we're still getting caught up with how to use Zoom and how to track everybody. So if you send me an email, I will send everybody the presentation that has Jay and Michael and Joseph's contact information as well as my own. And I want to especially thank Jay Pike and Joe Schulman and Michael Kuhn for helping us wade our way through the CARES Act. And thanks to everybody who tuned in. And we will certainly be looking forward to assisting you guys as this moves forward. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.